Good evening, everyone. This session is looking at supply chain data collection and particularly how unified approaches might transform sustainability performance. We've got a really excellent panel. Andrés, sustainability leader for Grupo Avianeia in Argentina. Ritu Twa is from DGB in South Africa. DGB, those of you who don't know, the TLA is a South African winemaker and distributor, and their brands include Boschendal, Bellingham, and Franchuk Cellar. We then have Michele Manelli, who is here with his Equalitas hat on this time. We had him on a panel earlier with his winemaker from Solcetto, Montepulciano hat on last time. And last, but by no means least, Andre Tarabus, who is the Climate Program Director for Preferred by Nature. So thanks all for joining us. As often with these things, we as the panel have had a bit of a confab ahead of time. We'll spend about the next half an hour or so going through some of the issues that we think sort of to sort of frame the issue. This session's about data collection. So obviously the first question's got to be data about what? The supply chain is very long, very complex, lots going on. What should priorities be? Does there sometimes need to be a balancing act? You know, the old thing about if everything's a priority, then nothing's a priority. How do you work out where the start should be? So I'm going to start off with the, as it were, the producer end. Andrés, I'll come to you first and then to Reed. Where do you start? Where did you start? Where do you go from there?
Thank you, Peter, and thank you to all here in the panel. I think that for us, as we are the one of the largest organic wine producers for Argentina, we want to lead sustainability. We know that, which is our role in our supply chains, but we know that it can be very, very challenging to be in line with all the required of our supply chain through time. Actually, through a year, we as a company, we receive more than 30 days of continuous audit, plus the different questionnaires sent by our retailers. So you can imagine the amount of information that luckily we have a team on sustainability, a team on certification that can be advocating to that. But we know that one company does not make the whole supply chain. Here is when we see the major challenge that we have, especially with small producers. We have a network of more than 100 producers, and many times the suppliers and retailers send the responsibility to us, and now we should send it to our producers, the small producer, but we are aware that most of our small producers are not in a position to give us the amount of information that is required in terms of energy consumption, in terms of water use, in terms of the different practices they have on the vineyard, despite that we audit them. And we think that we need to prioritize according to what is more important to its regions. In our case, for our grape producer, we create a program focusing on agrochemicals, on water use. Because if we are organic, we know that most of our products are not organic, but we want them at least to reduce the use of some harmful agrochemicals. So first we create a training program after start asking for information. We know that if we start asking for information, then by the long term, we end up with no producer willing to work or to deliver to us in the same level as we give to our retailers. So I think that it's very important that we don't have only one topic covered. We know that carbon footprint and climate action is very important, but sometimes it's especially important to see what the company is doing as a whole and not a particular supply chain to go to one retailer to each country, because sometimes it's easy to have a zero carbon footprint wine when the rest of your wine of your portfolio cannot achieve to a climate action that is very important, especially for us that we are in the southern hemisphere, and we know that transportation is a challenge for us because it's a part of the supply chain we cannot avoid and we have not control over it.
Reed, can I come to you next?
Well, priorities, I think for us being in South Africa, we're very focused on, at this stage, sustainable, more regenerative farming. It is organic, but it's always difficult with our temperatures and our terroir and things. So it is definitely a focus. Then from there, I think we're very much also into packaging and looking at what is available. Obviously, we can't import because then it makes no sense. So obviously, we still glass bottles, tins, alternative packaging. We look at, we've done our DGB, we've done our footprint since 2009. So we're very aware of what it is, scope 1, 2, and 3. So we've always included 3 because I don't think, like we've heard from earlier people, to exclude it is dangerous. You might live in a bit of a la-la land where you think you're okay, but you're not, because it is part of your product cycle, whichever way you look at it. And we have, in all those areas, really looked at opportunities to reduce, whether it's how we farm, what packaging we use, lightweighting of bottles. We've gone a long way since 2009. I think what they've said earlier, our biggest challenge there is also is priority, I would say, is to get the perception of the retailer, not only in South Africa, but I think for us is to compete internationally on what we can offer. And our focus has always been to sort of try and find out, and we sit on all forums to make sure we are very aware of what's happening out there and what technology is out there, and then obviously take it to all our suppliers, whether it's from the vineyard right through to transport. You spoke about transport earlier. We've also discovered road transport's killing us. So, you know, looking at rail it into the harbour is much cheaper than transporting it into the harbour. So we've really gone a long way to look at all possibilities. But I think priority for us in data collection and is to just realise the world for us is that we're all on the same journey. It's not a competition on wine quality or price or... This is not a competition. This is a journey where we all need to pull together, and we need to look at a synchronized approach on what is good and what's not good and how do you can improve. Because we've heard all the scenarios. It's almost like a matrix. You know, what is the best way to farm? And that will be your ideal. What's the best packaging? That will be your ideal. And you can go down the product cycle. But at the end of the day, you know, in your 30 or 50 year strategic plan to get there, it involves CapEx. It involves CapEx and everything else. So your strategic plan for the company should be 100% aligned with your sustainability goals. And I think that's a priority for all of us. It's not separate. You need to align that. So I think that for us, and then obviously in South Africa, priority for us is also the other pillar, bigger pillar of sustainability, which is social and the human factor that's in there because of where we are with creating jobs and making sure we can sustain the community we're in.
Yeah, we'll come to that point in a minute because I think it's a very important one. I mean, both of you on the producer end have made the point that there's sometimes what seems to be unjoined up demands made on you from the sort of retail end. I'd like to come to Andre and Michele to sort of ask you about how you handle that. Come to you first, Michele, with the Qualitas. You know, it's obviously your standards is a very comprehensive one. So how do you work with producers to sort of stage and phase what they do and the data they need to have? And Andre, same question to you after Michele is finished.
Well, let me first introduce Qualitas, which is a standard built after a long journey made by the value chain itself years ago. So a build-up project that putting together universities, research centers, association of producers. It tried to be in between, let's say, a collection of the best ISO or anyway internationally standardized experiences on sustainabilities and the need of rules to adapt those standards to the specific needs of a wine value chain and of in general how the wineries are organizing their different sizes and approaches to the process. So we tried to put together like a meta kind of PCR for the main criticities that we thought were the ones to be faced when we talk about sustainability in general and in wine in particular. So, of course, there are a lot of measurables sides, and I mean the main ones are surely carbon, water footprinting, but also the biodiversity indexing we have proposed, and which is today a solid also approach, which is another measurable of the impact on real biodiversity, on water, air, and soil managed in the ecosystem of the winery. But there are also other measurables in the social impacts, and we mean indicators on turnover, on harmony on the coexistence of life and working experiences. I mean, just to make some examples. Of course, there are, as you mentioned before, there need to be priorities, and priorities which need to be set based on the relevance of the impact, let's say, so the challenge that globally we are talking about, and the relevance also in terms of interest of this information. And I'm talking at the centralized level, of course, to in terms of information and relevance of then the quality, the potential impact that this information can have on the value chain itself. We have we understand, and we have already focused on some of these topics, and we have patronized several initiatives that intend, on the one hand, to ease the approach of the wineries to, for example, carbon and water footprinting, because they are certainly relevant as a knowledge for the entire market and society, and because they are certainly a requirement when we approach sustainability, because they are a priority in general in the approach, and because they are also providing data which are often not assumption, but are real data that can provide also consistent in information. So we've patronized initiatives on that to create tools to make the everyday job of the wineries easier and affordable for any size, let's say, of winery. But and at the same time, they can become an incredible potential of information for all the value chain and the system. Because imagine if we are, and that's also a point that is, I think, extremely relevant for the discussion of the sustainable wine roundtable in general. If our work of harmonization globally can agree on what are the minimum data to collect, the minimum quality of this collection, and we imagine that today with these digital opportunities we can easily in respect of privacy be able as a standard owner, but also at a certifying body level, to collect data which we are able to put together in a global survey. They can represent an interesting base to start thinking on about what are our impacts and what are the effect of our action of improvement over time. So this is in a way our approach. Our approach is a cross border between creating systems that ease the work and use the opportunity to collect data to be able to set long-term targets.
Okay, thank you. Andre, same question to you. How do you decide which data is required first? How do you work with the organizations you work with on getting that data? How do you phase it over time?
Right. We are working for quite some years in the carbon footprint in agriculture, and we could see that at the beginning it was the retailers, right, coming in and asking for this and trying to do the footprint, and well, that usually end up in using some kind of default value or assumptions or estimations. But the problem with this was that then you are using every year the same numbers or very similar numbers. So you kind of end up in a situation that there is no space for reduction, right? And based on that, or due to that, they kind of needed to go down to the supply chain, to the farmers, and ask for the real data, right? And then the development was kind of the first, the big producers could actually or have all the necessary tools to collect the data. And therefore, it kind of started that the big ones were supplying some data. And whenever there was enough data, then the kind of more conservative values were used for the smaller ones, right? So that's kind of a way how you can make your life easier, that whenever you have enough data, then you might not need to get the data from every single smallholder, but you can kind of use this assumption, and over time you improve the data, because obviously you want to get as accurate and concrete numbers as possible. But it is always in finding the balance between, you know, the credible and correct data and the administration which is behind, right? And the answer is really to have clever questioners or clever way how to collect the data without necessarily, you know, putting too much administration or time on a farmer who does not really need to be involved that much. So it is really, and we are working a lot with the companies to find or design the best checklist or the easiest checklist, or finding a way how you can collect the data without really bothering the farmers, which I believe is the aim here after all. I mean, we all want the best quality data, but it's also, it should come in somehow automatic way, so we don't really need to spend too much time on it.
Yes, and you don't want to be in a situation where the process of collecting data gets in the way of people actually doing their jobs, because obviously that's not desirable. I mean, that then actually sort of brings us on to another point, which is really to loop back to what Reed was saying about, you know, sort of broadly sort of human and labor rights issues. What do we do about collecting data on topics which are more qualitative than quantitative? I mean, notwithstanding that, yes, of course, there are challenges with, for example, carbon measurements, lots of challenges. Theoretically, at least, it's a quantitative thing. One should be able to measure, tons of carbon and evolutions of that over time. But how do we capture information around some of those softer issues? I don't really want to start on this. I mean, really, it's a point you made. So how do you think that that ought to be captured usefully?
I think on the human element, you've got to know what, and this sounds interesting, but a living wage. To be financially sustainable, it comes down to that for anybody, any employee in your company. And if you work with unskilled workers, that is for us a measurement to know what is that sustainable number, to make sure that your employees can be part of what you want to do, can come to work, and really participate in what you want to do. Further than that, you need to know on what's going on in your community, and how we measure it is just by social services. We've got social services that we employ in the community, and they have different measurements in place. We've also now rolled it out to all the farm communities where we purchase from. whether it's the co-op system or whether it's people producing grapes. And they give us a good measurement by just looking at what is the social dipstick on the farm or on in the town or wherever you are. We've got three plants in the Western Cape, and we do it in all our areas where we operate. And I know that most of our opposition in South Africa do the same. And from there, we work with programs to make sure, we can sustain communities and obviously our employees who live in these communities. And it, so in a way, it's measurable, but some of it is a bit more soft skills, which they need rather than measurement of what. There's a few things we can measure to see what is the social stance.
So in effect, what you're saying is that it's quite difficult to measure all of it, but you're able to have enough touch points within the story of what the challenges are to be able to have some sense of how things are evolving over time. Michaela, I mean, Qualitas is very unusual as a wine sustainability standard in properly covering sort of social and human issues. I mean, Wheater in South Africa is perhaps the only other one. I'd just be interested in your take on this as well. You know, how do you properly capture these things within the standard?
Well, our approach is certainly mostly a quality approach. This quality approach, of course, is producing a lot of measurements, even on the social pillar, and particularly on the labor, which is the most important part of the labor management. Of course, I hardly believe it at the moment we would easily get to measurements that would allow an information process all the way to the consumer. Let's make this example. But I think we should remind, which is again our approach, that what we think our consumers are expecting is at least a minimum verified, assessed quality of the management of the social sustainability along all the value chain. So I think that this is an important point. So we need to understand that the possibility to seriously and in a reliable, transparent way, and in a way which is agreed as a minimum qualified way, with a qualified set of indicators, has been traced and verified along all the value chain. Because I think this is one characteristic in wine, which is extremely clear. We have a spread and variated source of sourcing of our products, and we need to certainly care about this traceability of the social social management. And I think that and this is the way. So we have worked tirelessly, and we worked to set up a very complex system of indicators, which I repeat are more, they create a lot of data, but they are definitely quality based, and we are asking for as much qualified verification of the same quality, not only inside the winery, bottler, transformer, whatever, or mixed of these, but along all the value chain. And this is what we're trying to transmit to the consumer all the way down. And so the harmonization of this approach would be for us an important target.
Okay, thanks. Andre, I want to ask the same question to you. Because there's sort of a mix between the data points where they're appropriate, but it's having that story all the way along the supply chain seems important as well. Where's your point of view on the balance on that?
Well, we are quite a big fan of a risk-based approach. So like we have like a sourcing hub, which is an open source database of different risk assessments for different commodities and regions. And we kind of try to collect all these data for different commodities and then quantify this and rise the risk for different aspects. It is both environmental, social, or climate, right? And we try, you know, to do a ranking whenever specific indicator is relevant for specific country and commodity, and then that should result in a way that the companies are focusing on the most critical aspects in the area, and then implementing the mitigation measures for these aspects, right? So there again, like the aim is that you are not wasting your energy on things which might be low risk for a specific country, but you are implementing systems for the ones which are having the ranking as high risk, right? So we are very much using these risks approaches for different areas.
Yeah, so although I think, you know, as the Oxfam report on sort of some of the wine areas in Italy last year demonstrated, and the recent report out of the Bordeaux Chamber of Commerce, that these issues aren't limited to the obvious countries like, for example, South Africa and Argentina. They're present also in more developed places as well. Eric has been raising up, or there's been an ongoing conversation in the chat about this sort of sense of some degree of standardization. I mean, audit fatigue gets talked about a lot. Andres, this is something you mentioned in our prep call. You know, looking at it from the supplier end, how do we get better join up about what you're being asked to do? You know, if you as a business are spending 30 days a year managing this stuff, you know, that's 30 days when you and colleagues aren't doing your day job. But okay, to some extent, that is your day job. But how do you think we could get to a stage where there is a more standardized approach, that there are fewer questionnaires going out? You know, is it more reliance on locally based standards like, you know, Wines of Argentina or Equalitas, where actually that then becomes the standard, almost like health and safety? There's a certification which then becomes accepted internationally, or what? How would you want to see that go? Andres, I know it's something you feel strongly about, so I'll start off with you.
Yeah, no. As you mentioned, I think that is a reality that audit fatigue can happen with the teams, because every time you receive an audit in your winery, in your vineyard, you're not only the team receiving, but the whole process, different managers, different levels. And we know that it can get exacted. That's why internally we work harmonizing process, so we work in the right manner every day of the year. Still, we still receive like 30 days of audit when we have someone working in our facilities. So of course, we think that standardization has happened with ISO for health and safety can be something really useful. Also, the approach that this ISO certification have, that they are not only based in good practice, but also in continuous improvement. Because by the end of the day, what we are judged for our job or our program is sustainability. If we are better in terms of the objective we have than we were the previous year. And I think this kind of audit that not only look if you have one paper that many sustainability standards that only focus on best practice, only focus if you have the right paper in the right place on the winery, signed by the right person, and there you're okay. I mean, sometimes that not reflect the really labor that you are doing on sustainability. And I sometimes realize that retailers are not aware of the amount of job behind every request they ask, and that sometimes in terms of sustainability, we foster the development of large companies, medium company, but also small suppliers. And as we also have, as I was mentioning before, a small grape suppliers, and we know that we cannot ask for the same amount of information or in deep with topic as we are asked by our retailers. And I think trying to help to develop the underdeveloped is better than only say like, this is the bar now. The ones that can reach it, good. The rest can go to sell to other market, because by the end of the day, in the balance, we won't have a more sustainable industry. We will have some sustainable market delivered by the sustainable company, and then we will have the rest of the company delivering to other markets that where sustainability is not a key. And I think as the one that are participating in sustainable wine roundtable, really think that the wine industry can lead the sustainability aspect, and that can be an example for the rest of the industry, and that we can really become a better sector by improving, but also by to helping the improving the small producer or the region that haven't developed their standard yet. And harmonization and having this at least minimum set of rules can say like, well, this is the fair game now, this is the minimum. Then each company can have set this bar and show year to year an improvement. And I think that's is better than only having this high bar that only a couple of companies can reach.
No, and that's an interesting point. I mean, Toby and I work in other agricultural supply chains, and you're definitely seeing this happen as a result, for example, of EU due diligence regulations. Looking, say, at palm oil, you're getting quite a lot of the big suppliers from there saying, well, you know, for the European market, we can only buy it from large-scale plantations, which, great, it means the stuff going to Europe is fine, but it actually has a negative impact on the ground because it means all the smallholder farmers lose their income, et cetera, et cetera. So you end up with as it were, a two-tier market in a way that's very unhelpful. Andre, how do you address this? Because, I mean, Michaela, come to you in a minute, because obviously you're in a slightly different position because you're aimed at a particular market. But Andre, theoretically, you're looking globally. So how do you manage this avoidance of audit fatigue?
Yeah, I mean, well, I fully agree here with Andres. I mean, it's really sometimes too much, right? I mean, there are different standards for, you know, health and safety, social, environmental, carbon, and so on. Well, we are fully aware of this, and we have developed actually a sustainability framework, which is a very broad scheme, which is trying to capture everything. And there again, like using the risk-based approach, you can kind of know what are the important topics and focus on these. And yeah, so in a way you could with one audit, obviously a big one, but you can do like all, you can cover all the points. But there again, like there is a need for harmonizations between the schemes and, you know, recognition and so on, because obviously having so many different schemes and then every retailer is requesting different claim or label or something that I think is something what is simply not good for the market, and it also creates a lot of confusion because then nobody really knows what is behind the claim, which, you know, is on the product. So,
yeah. And I think that's right. And there's enough confusion amongst many consumers anyway about what even well-established sustainability standards like, you know, Fair Trade and Rainforest Alliance, what they mean, much less, you know, newer ones in wine. And I mean, I plug for what we're doing with SWR, but that's what we are trying to do with the various standards that exist around the world in wine, to try and find some sort of way, I call it Google Translate, you know, what's the equivalence between them, that there may be sort of differences in the way things are done at a local level, but in terms of the key issues there's consonance, a little bit like an ISO approach. I mean, Michele, coming to you on this one, I mean, how do you on the one hand manage downwards with the vineyards that and wineries that you work with to make sure they're not overly put upon, particularly smaller producers, but equally, how do you then work kind of upwards to mean that you can communicate to an international audience, an international market, that look, these, you don't need to go and re-audit these wine producers because our standard already says that's been done. You know, there's almost, you're in a position where you're looking in both directions. How does that operate from your side?
Well, we are certainly trying to capture opportunities of mutual recognition with other standards. For example, we have a mutual recognition with Amfori on the social pillar. We have with BRCS. We have with organic farming. So we are trying, since sustainability in theory is an infinite series of perspectives, even though we know there are the more relevant ones, but even the more relevant ones are already a lot. So in theory, it should be the synthesis and the summary of the most relevant approaches. And we know that that wineries are already exposed to other verification and other protocols and other and specific needs. So we're trying to as much as possible be able to simplify the work of the wineries and the work of the verification and the cost of the of this in general. But of course we need to be, since we need to be reliable, we are very keen on the idea of the quality of this audit and the quality of this process, and on the need of harmonization and standardization to be able that in the future, because that's not a reality today, when we use the word sustainability, we would be sure that it is used only when there is a minimum quality of management and verification. And in this sense, we are also quite rigid in the idea that there must always be a corporate verification before a single product one, for example. So we don't think a winery can be stating that it has a sustainable product if it doesn't at least consider the sustainability management of the entire facility where it is produced. And then at the same time, we want to see the value chain if the product is sourced. But this is you need to find the balance, but you cannot make too many compromises. You have to think of the need of simplification, as we said, but at the same time, the quality quality management process itself, risk management process itself, however we want to call, is a requirement of this whole vision and approach we have. And to close, I consider that today Equalitas is certifying, is putting together nearly 20% of the Italian wine value chain, which is a big number if we consider that Italy is a quite large player. So we have like over a billion bottle under control and a few hundred wineries and a lot of thousands of hectares of vineyards. And it is in fact something we were expecting even earlier in time, because when we started surveying the Italian value, the Italian industry a few years ago, we were estimating that already a third of our industry were already preparing 10 years ago about that. And so we estimate to get quite quick and fast to that third. Surely we know that the remaining 70% or so, that's the challenge. And let me be a little bit cynical and say that I think and I forecast that if we work well in supporting the quality of the work of the community that wants to really seriously manage this problem of managing a planet with 8 billion people and limited resources and everybody willing to needing to be in comfort and happiness. Well, we hope that the 70% gets excluded if they don't also participate to this game by the market itself. So to really create this deal between the producer and the consumer to make the world a better and better managed place. And this is at least my personal hope.
Rhea, I want to come to you on this. The South African industry has got some quite small players. who may not have resource to do what is required of them. What's your take on how we manage this effectively without, on the one hand, trying to bring everyone along, but recognizing that some particularly smaller suppliers might have a bit more of a challenge just in terms of resource and manpower in actually moving some of these agendas forward? Or do they just, you know, subsume into larger entities?
I think in South Africa, it's we've got quite good standards in place where all wineries are involved first on a self-auditing system where there's a carbon calculator included. So we find the medium guys can handle it, and the smaller guys, we get involved from the bigger company side because we are interested in the product cycle. We will assist. It's an online platform. We know they have all the measurements. So, but it's probably somewhere in a drawer, or like Andrea said, it's complicated for them because it's a one-man show or so. So we've taken the approach as part of our social responsibility to assist them on the carbon calculator because we also buy from them. So I think, and that's quite something in South Africa that's very common, that they get assisted by the bigger players and the medium players and industry. And you know, we've got quite a controlled wine industry in South Africa with a certification ceiling, so that information is quite available to see who are the smaller guys and what they're struggling with. So it's definitely a effort from everybody, but we do include them because that's how it is here, because there's that social side that needs to be considered at all times.
I think that's I think that sort of big brother, little brother thing, I think, is an interesting one. I mean, I was at a board meeting of Sustainable Wines Great Britain, and sitting next to a couple of small producers. I mean, literally, as in the management team was husband, wife, and mother. And they were sort of saying, you know, we get to sustainability on a Thursday afternoon before coffee. And it's, you know, and there isn't the resource that to do it that you might have in, you know, one of the bigger things, but you don't at the same time want to exclude them. On the other hand, as Michele said, you know, there's no point in doing it if people get a free pass for just saying, well, I'm small, therefore I can't do it properly. And yeah, I think that's always going to be a balancing act
We look for willingness. I think our starting point is, are you willing and do you want to come along? And then we assist. If you're not willing, you'll have to get on board or you're going to fall off. It's how it is.
Yeah, we're finding that very much the sort of ethos of quite a lot of difference in ethos amongst different standards. Some it's either there's excellence, unless you meet that, we're not interested. Others it's let's get everyone in and then gradually sort of ratchet up over time. I know we're sort of slightly running out of time, but there's an interesting point that my colleague James has raised. Two bottles of wine from the same producer. One was in a standard bottle, so presumably 550 grams. Another was in a 1.2 kilo bottle. How would... I'm going to address this to the standards guys, so Andrea and Sue Michele. How would you deal with a vineyard that has what I suppose one might regard as flagrant disregard for sustainability where it really counts? Andrea, how would you address that?
Well, using our certification scheme, that would be a different value of carbon footprint behind each of the bottle, because whenever you want to use the own product label, then you need to calculate the emissions connected with the specific product, right? And there again, like, you have to be transparent about it. So all the information have to be public, so everybody can find how the calculation was done, what was the data used, and so on. So,
okay, Michele?
Well, same. Of course, there are many indicators that would, defavorize or put it under a dark light the 1.2 kilo bottle, and this would be mentioned, would be come out somewhere. Let me say that we are on a historical phase in which, at least that has been our experience and our approach, but I think it's quite shareable, around in which we are not able to set yet, we have not been able to set benchmarks, cutoff benchmarks, on, for example, on the weight of the water. But let me say more clearly, more widely, on the footprint, on the carbon footprint of a bottle or the GHG inventory of wine. This was not the approach at this stage. Yeah, so at this stage is we want people to be aware of their footprint, for example, on climate, and we want them to communicate it, to make it public, and to engage for an improvement. This is the current historical stage we are in. If we are able, and that's something that we can do now, and it can be done quick, to harmonize the measurements and to also collect the data to be able, as for example, we're starting to do to elaborate, for example, the geographical size differentiations that may need to be done between a hot and a cold area, or between a small and a large player, that for different reasons we can distinguish in terms of benchmarking, then I think that we will be able to enter into a cutoff benchmarking situation in which we can say, no, this 1.2 kilo. I mean, I would love to say it already today, because it is of course anti-historical to put the wine into a 1.2 kilo bottle today, period. There is no reason. It's simply a nonsense. And I think that the market is nearly ready already to exclude it by itself. But again, I think that this is for the future, yeah. Close future, but it's not yet now.
Yeah. Well, James has just put up in the chat, I won't say which winery it was. So I think there's a sweepstake going on for us to guess who it might have been. And if it's any consolation, that's not by any means the heaviest bottle we've come across in our work and bottle weight. The heaviest we've come across so far, empty, was 2.85 kilos, which isn't so much a bottle as a lethal weapon. So yes, I think, as you say, that if there's no rational argument for that, but I guess there's probably some brand person thinks it's a good idea. Oh yes, James said narrow it down to USA, so it's probably West Coast, pretty Napa or something, I should think. I think we've come to quite an interesting sort of endpoint here, which is the trouble with data is it sort of implies everyone's got to be at the same data, not just the same data point, but the same point in terms of what that data says. Whereas I think both what Ree said and what Michaela, you said, is that actually it's about a journey. What is going to be good practice in one location may be very different from elsewhere. But the whole point is we want people to see that they've bought into the concept that they need to be gradually improving, that they're starting to measure what seems to matter, and there's a gradual improvement in that over time. And that, perhaps sort of comparisons between wineries operating in very different circumstances around the world isn't always very helpful. But having data which is able to make sure that each of those is able to improve its process over time, but then be able to explain in a contextual way what's relevant and useful for what they're trying to do, I think that's also important. So I think that's a good place to finish. I'd just like to thank our panel, André, Ree, Andres, and Michaela. Thank you all very much. Thanks for input.